Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you are staying healthy and happy that you are joining us today right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network. You can always find us at prn.fm. And one of the wonderful things about having a show right here on the Gary Knoll Network is the fact that you can tune in every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., and listen to us live. And you can also call in with your questions. And, in fact, today we will open the phone lines for questions. And you can also tell your friends if you hear something that you like here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z or any other show on Progressive Radio Network. You can listen anytime, day or night, by visiting the archives. And to find that, just go to Progressive Radio Network or PRN.fm, and there's a big button there for archives. Then go down to any show you'd like to listen to. And in this case, of course, it's Natural Nurse, and it is under N for Natural Nurse. And there's all the shows for you archived right there, so you can listen anytime. And I find it interesting because very often I do get calls from listeners who said, this one girl recently called and said, oh, I listen to your show every day on my way to work. I said, really? When do you go to work? She says, well, I drive to work around 8 a.m. And I said, where do you live? She said, oh, in Missouri. I said, that's interesting because we're not on every day at that time in Missouri, especially Missouri time. She said, oh, no. You know, I guess all young people know about this and I don't, which is that there's no relationship to time and listening to the radio, because what she does is she just downloads the show regularly onto her something. I'm sure some of you know what that is, but I guess an iPod or an iPad or one of those iThings. And then she has a whole bank of shows to listen to, and she plugs it into her radio in her car, and then she listens to it. And she regularly sends me questions about something that she heard about the show that she wants to learn more about in terms of holistic medicine. So if you want to call in with your question today, you can do so by dialing us up at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And we'll take your questions online. Now, I did want to talk to you today about a few things, including the fact that we have a huge amount of classes coming up. If you're a regular listener to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, you know that we have, Dr. Zamperone and I have an organization called Natural Alternatives Health and Education. So through that organization, and that's been in place about 25 years now, we offer many classes, and some are actually coming up right now, so I'm going to tell you about them. One is September 30th, and if you're listening before September 30th, 2012, that's when this class is, and it's this Sunday. And what we do is go out in the field at a beautiful location, which is called Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm. And at Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm, they grow a huge amount of highly medicinal and edible plants. And, of course, now it's time to pick them, right, because this is the end of the year. So they have tons of plants ready to go. And not only that, but we also take you out in the field and we look at a lot of the wild plants that grow. Like right here at Nature's Answer, and I work with Nature's Answer, and we've been making herbal supplements since 1972. And one of the PhD plant scientists came in today, and he was very excited to be looking into how to use jewelweed, which is a plant that, interestingly enough, grows outside right next to poison ivy, if you know how to identify it. And that's what Dr. Z and I will show you in the field at our herbal medicine making workshops. If you miss it this Sunday, we have them regularly, usually in the summer. This is the last one for 2012. But if you hear this show at a later date, we have them ongoing all the time, all over the country. So this scientist was working on actually making a cream, a skin cream, that would be available commercially that uses jewelweed. Jewelweed is an amazing plant because that's what's so incredible when we look at nature. It grows right by poison ivy in the field. And guess what it's useful for, believe it or not? One of the main uses for it is to treat poison ivy if you do get a poison ivy rash. So I think that's just one of the amazing things in nature. So we actually teach you how to pick your own jewelweed in the field right now. Not only can you use it to treat a skin rash, but you also can use it to eat, because right now in the fall, jewelweed has a little nut. And the reason it's called jewel is because of the nut. When you press the flower, which is orange, and I have to show you what it looks like, so you'd have to come out in the field with us to see, or you could look it up online. If you are walking along and see a jewelweed plant, by the way, it's also known as wild impatience. And you know what impatience looks like in your garden. Well, jewelweed looks just like impatience, except it's a wild plant and it's very, very tall. And it has these beautiful orange flowers on it all summer. But it does look just like an impatient in terms of its leaf structure and the fact that if you break off the stem, it's a hollow, watery stem. So it's really a fun plant to know about. And there's also no poisonous look-alike, which is great. So you use it in a couple ways. If you're walking in the field, you can actually break off that stem and rub the liquid on all the exposed areas of your body, like your ankles and your arms. And if you rub that on there, what it does is deactivate the active component in poison ivy that causes the skin rash. So we know the mechanism of action, as we so often do. We so often do know the mechanism of action of various natural medicines. And then when you rub it on your skin, it not only stops you from developing poison ivy, it also can be used to help stop any kind of skin itching if you have already developed that after rubbing on poison ivy or any other what's called minor contact dermatitis, which just means a little skin rash. That's all it means. Sometimes we have very fancy words and really, when we break it down, it's not that difficult to understand. So the other important thing about the jewelweed is if you notice the little flowers that are out there now, if you just cup your hand and slightly press that flower, it makes a spring action. And in there, there's actually nature, or if you're into God, you can call it God, whatever you want to call it. But something creates these marvelous naturally occurring flowers and all the actions in there. You just press the flower and it has a spring, a real spring, and it springs these little teeny edible seeds from the plant, from the jewelweed plant, into your hand. And these are highly edible and delicious. As a matter of fact, they are so high in protein that you could survive off eating them if you were ever stuck in the woods, which is a very good thing to know about in case you ever find yourself in the woods. So everything about learning how to collect and make your own medicine from wild, edible, and medicinal plants, as well as the kind of herbs that you can grow in your garden, is the topic of conversation in many of our books. If you go to naturalnurse.com and click on books, you'll see all the books that Dr. Zamperone and I have authored, including the Natural Medicine Chest. And the Natural Medicine Chest goes deeply into how to make your own herbal medicines, including how to make your own extracts, tinctures, salves, teas, which are called infusions or decoctions. There's a difference between herbal teas. Some are called infusions. That means you take the plant, put it in a cup, add hot water, let it sit a few minutes and drink it. So that's called a simple. It's a very simple preparation. I'll tell you one that you can be doing for yourself if you'd like to experiment. First of all, you never want to collect a plant that has a poisonous look-alike. So a good plant to start out with is dandelion, because almost everyone recognizes dandelion. Another excellent one to use now at this time of year, and we're doing this show today at the end of September, so in early fall, is a pine tree. If you think that you can totally identify a pine tree, and most people can, by the way, it doesn't matter which kind of pine tree. It can be a northern pine or a scrub pine or any other kind of pine tree. You can make this simple infusion for yourself. What you do is just strip the little needles, you know, those fine needles that are on the pine tree, strip them from the pine bark, and take a little of the bark as well, which is a pretty easy thing to do. You just take the bark. And you put it in a cup, and you add hot water. And then you let it steep for about 5 minutes. And then you can just strain it, you know, through a regular strainer, because the pine needles are pretty large, they'll all come out, and go ahead and sip the tea. That's an interesting thing to do because it improves your immune system. Now, when we say improves your immune system, nowadays we can actually measure the immune system. And some of the ways we might measure the immune system is to look at the activity of white blood cells, because when the immune system is stimulated, white blood cells are much more active in terms of their ability to go after, recognize, and engulf any kind of invading microorganism, such as a bacteria or virus. Or also, you know, our body produces both free radicals, which you've probably heard of before, as well as cancer cells. And when your immune system is working well, you can just go ahead and gobble those things up, and your body is doing that regularly to, you know, cut down on any kind of disease getting going. So that is something that making pine needle tea does. Now, I find that fascinating because the Native Americans in our area regularly used as a traditional therapy pine bark and pine needle tea, and they used it at the change of seasons. And of course, that's what we're involved in right now, the change of seasons. And they would actually use this tea regularly at this time. And of course, they could not actually measure the change, let's say, in white blood cell motility like we can do nowadays. But they were able to see that people were better off and were less likely to develop any kind of cold or flu because of the stresses of a change of season on the body, change in temperature. And so they continued to use it. And later down the road, when we developed scientific analysis, we were able to see how and why this traditional remedy actually worked. And that's one of the things that I find so fascinating about natural medicine, that whenever we look at many of these traditional, old-fashioned, what we call folkloric remedies, we find that they not only work, we knew they worked, because guess what? No folkloric remedy doesn't work that I have ever looked into, because how does it get passed down from generation to generation? If people did something and it didn't make any difference or, in fact, cause harm, then they usually stop doing it. So when we look at ancient shamanic remedies that are passed down historically from generation to generation, we find that, lo and behold, not only do they work when we evaluate the outcome, but we begin to understand the mechanism of action on how it works. So we will take a break right now. We'll listen to a natural medicine chest. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of natural healing right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we'd love to take your questions. So if you'd like to call in, just go ahead and call us at 888-874-4888. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Uh-huh. On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen, or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back for more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Ellen Kamai. And with you today on Gary Mills Network, that's Progressive Radio Network, you can listen live or you can listen on the archive anytime at prn.fm. And we were talking earlier about collecting wild, edible, and medicinal plants. And we also mentioned that today we will actually take your calls at 888-874-4888 if there's any issue in natural medicine you have a question about. And we're going to continue by telling you that you can join us in the field this fall in many venues. You can find them all at naturalnurse.com under schedules. Now, I did mention that we're having an edible and medicinal herb walk and medicine-making workshop, and that's at Gilberti's Organic Herb Garden in Westport, Connecticut. And that's this Sunday, which is September 30th. And we're talking in 2012, in case any of you are listening to this show at another date. And then we have in Seattle, Washington, for you Western listeners, a lecture on October 4th, which will be Botanicals, Scientific Validation of Herbal Medicine. And that's going to be part of the Natural Products Association Northwest event in Seattle, Washington. So you certainly can join us there if you're on the West Coast. Then on October 6th, we're having a very exciting event, and that's going to be at Bridgeport University. It is being co-sponsored by Bridgeport University along with Stony Brook Medical School, and I am a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook Medical School, and Dr. Zamperone is a professor at the University of Bridgeport. So we got together between the two schools, and we're putting on a full-day conference, which is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it's called Evidence-Based Natural and Integrative Medicine Symposium. What's so marvelous about this particular symposium is that it gives 5 CEU credits. If you're a health professional of any kind, massage therapist, chiropractor, nurse, physician, and anyone can actually apply for the CEU credits. We have RDs coming, we have social workers coming, and we did something very special with this day. Even though it is a professional level evidence-based natural and integrative medicine symposium, it is fully open to the public. And it's extremely reasonable to attend. And if anyone wants to come, I just do want to tell you that the language is going to be medical language. So we're not bringing the conversation into a consumer language, but consumers certainly can attend. And if you don't need the CEU credits, you don't have to apply for those. So that's a very unique opportunity. Some of the topics that will be addressed include autoimmune disease. Many of the new tests that are available that can predict the occurrence of autoimmune disease years before any symptoms appear, which is really the right time to address it. We'll also be talking about irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, leaky gut syndrome, and how to avoid developing those, as well as how to treat them with integrative and natural medicine. And when we say evidence-based, that means we are showing all the scientific data from mainstream medical literature that supports the use of natural medicines. So that would be something that I'm sure you would find interesting. Then on October 21st, 2012, we can meet you in Chinatown. Dr. Zamperone and I will be leading our Echo Tours for Cures, where we actually spend the day in Chinatown and review all the interesting aspects of traditional Chinese medicine. And traditional Chinese medicine has been practiced, actively practiced, for more than 10,000 years. So we will look at things like tongue and pulse diagnosis, which is how they do what's called pre-symptomatic, non-invasive diagnosis. And it is really the best way to do things, and there's a reason for that. That's because when the ancient physicians in China were brought on board, they were paid a different way, in a completely different mindset, which I think makes a lot more sense. They were paid a monthly stipend or fee by the head of the household, usually the father in China, if everyone stayed well. If people got ill, they were not paid. That is like diametrically opposed to how our healthcare providers function nowadays, isn't it? Which is that they are only paid if you don't get well. You don't usually go once a month to your doctor and go, "Hi, I'm fine. Here, we'll pay you." No. But that is how it was set up in ancient China. And so for a normal family, if the physician did not keep everyone in the family perfectly well, then they did not get paid for the month. So that was very motivational. But if they were the family provider for the royalty, such as the emperors or anyone in the royal court, if anyone got sick, their head got cut off. Okay? So that's very motivational to create a high-end pre-symptomatic diagnostic technique. Because think about this. They were not able to run blood work. They did not have a microscope to see if there was any kind of disease-causing microorganism around. So they actually developed these ancient techniques called tongue and pulse diagnosis. And when they are used now, I recently read of a study where they brought in several traditional Chinese medical doctors, and then they compared the results that they got with their tongue and pulse diagnosis and other pre-symptomatic non-invasive diagnostic techniques that they use. They compare the accuracy of those with regular conventional medical tests, such as x-rays and ultrasounds and blood work. And the Chinese doctors were more than 97% accurate. Actually, that's a higher percentage of being accurate than the Western medical tests are in and of themselves. Isn't that incredible? And here it is with no x-rays, no skin puncture, no kind of invasion of the body in any way. And the therapeutic modalities that they use have been tested scientifically as well. That's one of the reasons acupuncture is now available even under insurance reimbursement in mainstream medicine. So that's going to be October 21st. We'll meet in Chinatown for our Chinatown Echo Tour for Cures. And we'll also do a lot of fun things like Qi Gong in the park, as well as visiting herbal apothecaries and having a sit-down sacred Chinese tea ceremony. So if you'd like to register for that, you can also go to naturalnurse.com and see, you know, how you can get involved. We'd love to have you. And we have other events as well, because on November 4th, I'll be doing an energy medicine symposium, and that one will be in Deerfield Beach, Florida, where we'll look into the esoteric teaching of dowsing. You know, dowsing has been used for many thousands of years as well, and they use different things as dowsing rods. You've probably seen some people in the movies use sticks that find water. Do you know that's still being used today? And we can investigate how you can do self-dowsing to find out which nutrients are best for you, which foods are best for you. And the dowsing class will be in Deerfield Beach, Florida, at the Theosophy Society, and that's going to be on November 4th. And on November 18th in Long Island, we'll have the Naval Expo. That will be at the Huntington Hilton. And that's a wonderful day where literally hundreds of holistic healthcare professionals present to the community, and you are welcome to join us there as well. And that will be on in November, November 14th. That's November 18th. That will be a Sunday all-day event at the Huntington Hilton. So those are just some of the many events that you can actually come on board with us and join us. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is something that you might have heard in the news. And this was an article about organic food. And it was supposedly a study, and we're going to talk about that particular study in depth. So you know that, in fact, organic food is the best choice, especially if you read the studies for yourself instead of just relying on the headlines. So we're going to take a little break right here so that we can let you know about some other of the wonderful, great shows that we have for you right here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we'd be happy to take your questions. You can call them in at 888-874-4888. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again. Thanks for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I wanted to talk to you about an article that was recently in the news. And I would say organic food, still the best choice. Read the studies for yourself. And what you want to do with everything, including things that you hear about in the naturally based world, so to speak, is that discretion is a virtue. Because, you know, multimedia marketers are convinced that the American public is swayed by headlines and that they do not have the interest or intelligence to a scratch below the surface. And I don't believe that about you, especially listeners to Progressive Radio Network. But this is a case in point that I wanted to discuss. On September 3rd, just about a couple weeks ago, just as everyone was getting serious in terms of returning to school or making plans to head back to Florida for the winter like myself or ending summer activities, then all of a sudden on that day, very interesting day to introduce this, splashed all across the news media, including the Washington Post, WebMD, Associated Press, Reuters, and CBS, CNN, and I'm sure you heard about it, either on the radio or on the news media. And this is what the headline said. Organic foods no healthier than conventional food, or organic foods, are they worth the extra cost? And my immediate reaction when I heard the headlines was, let me first go and read the actual full article that they're referring to. So I found the name of the article, which was called, Are Organic Foods Safer or Healthier than Conventional Alternatives, a Systematic Review? That's the actual name of the article itself. Okay? So that tells us not much, because maybe the answer is yes, they are, or maybe the answer is no, they're not. So if you went just with the things that you heard in the press, you, of course, would assume that they are not healthier. So I decided to read it for myself. And by the way, I do have an article about this on my blog at naturalnurse.com under blog, and it's called Organic Food, Is It Safer and Healthier? And within the article, I give you a link to the actual article, which you can read for yourself. Okay? It was conducted at Stanford University, which is a very well-known university, obviously, and it was published in a serious journal called the Annals of Internal Medicine. So you can read the abstract for yourself. When you do, you will see that the conclusion that they came to was, number one, consumption of organic food significantly reduces your exposure to pesticide residues by 30% versus consuming conventional food. Well, that to me sounds like they're saying that it's healthier. Wouldn't you say so? I don't know. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it, and maybe the headlines are right. Again, the first conclusion they came to is consumption of organic food may significantly reduce exposure to pesticide residues by 30% versus consuming conventional food. The next thing that they ascertained by doing this study was that consumption of organic food significantly reduces the risk of exposure to antibiotic-resistant disease-causing bacteria, again, by approximately 33%, even a more significant change in exposure. Now, what are some of the antibiotic-resistant diseases and other diseases caused? I'm sure you've heard of them. I'm sure you've heard of things like salmonella poisoning that shows up sometimes in food, etc. So here's evidence that is published in the Annals of Internal Medicine and performed at Stanford University, showing that you reduce your risk of exposure to these kinds of microbe-carried diseases by approximately 33% if you're eating organic food versus conventional food. That's pretty good. Then the third point that they found was that review of the literature lacks strong evidence that organic foods are significantly more nutritious than conventional food. So they did not find in this study, by the way, it was not a study, it was actually a review of other literature. And I will tell you, a lot of the literature that they reviewed is put out by the very companies that grow conventional and GMO processed food, such as Monsanto. So those are some of the things that we look at when we regard studies, okay? We want to see if, in fact, these things are realistically based or not. Now, what does that tell us? Well, first of all, instead, you know, they could have chosen any one of those headlines. Isn't that true? They could have chosen a headline saying, well, look at how wonderful this study is because we're showing that you'll get a much lower degree of pesticide residue and a much lower degree of disease-causing microorganisms if you eat organic food. Instead, they chose one of the outcomes, which was that the literature lacked strong evidence that organic foods are significantly more nutritious than conventional food. And so that's pretty great. You know, organic food, they could have said, they could have had a big, giant headline saying organic food is a great asset in maintaining health with less pesticide residue and less bacteria. Instead, the headlines did not mention the positive health enhancing aspects of organic foods and blew up and actually twisted the results to obscure the obvious superiority of organic foods. So my question was, why do you think that they were doing that? Why would they do that, do you think? So that was pretty interesting to me. I couldn't really understand that until you think about the powers that be. And one of the interesting things that I put forth is thinking about why would anyone want to put forth incorrect information. I came to the conclusion that the timing of the release of this study coincided with the current movement in California, which is working very hard to pass Proposition 37. So I'm wondering if any of our listeners out there are aware of Proposition 37, and I'm sure if you've been listening to other shows right here on Progressive Radio Network, then you would know that, in fact, Proposition 37 is about stopping GMOs. Well, when I say stopping GMOs, first of all, what are GMOs? Those are genetically modified foods. And Proposition 37 is not actually about stopping them. What it's about is allowing the labeling of GMOs. So it's called the Right to Know Act. You can find out more at CaliforniaRightToKnow.org. So that's CA Right to Know.org. And the Right to Know Act is also called Proposition 37. It's on the ballot in California this November. And if it is passed, it would require food in California to be labeled in terms of containing ingredients that are genetically modified. Now, you know, this still goes on in all other countries. That goes on in countries, but not in the United States. Here, we're sort of not allowed to know if our food contains genetically modified organisms or not. Now, why do you think that would happen? If it was passed, the Right to Know Act, it would require the food in California to be labeled. That's this year. And if it passes in California, it may likely and hopefully will lead to labeling in all 50 states within the next few years. Now, I personally have been working staunchly against the proliferation of GMO foods since they were being developed. And I'll tell you, they were being developed in the 1960s. In the late 1960s, we were involved at Cornell University in the development of GMOs, believe it or not. And a lot of people think that they're a new thing, but they're not actually a new thing. They actually are an old thing. So they've been going on since the late 60s, and I was asked as a young research assistant to work in the laboratories in Cornell University on helping to develop these GMOs. And I thought even back then when I read the initial papers, the initial research proposals, that it was like a really bad idea for many, many reasons, which has in fact come to pass. It makes plants that they specifically make them to be resistant to pesticides. Now think about this. They make the GMOs to be able to survive under huge doses of very, very highly carcinogenic and dangerous pesticides. And that would include things like Roundup, which is made by Monsanto Corporation. So they put those on, and then they spray everything, and everything else dies except the Roundup genetically modified plants. So, of course, that leads to owning the rights to the seeds by Monsanto, and it also sells a whole lot more pesticides. In fact, the sale of pesticides has increased since the introduction of genetically modified foods thousands of times. So I certainly hope that if passed in California, Proposition 37 will spread and labeling will go on all throughout this country like it does in all other countries around the world. Now, let me ask you this. Why would anyone be against labeling of GMO foods? Well, the labeling would not stop anyone from choosing to eat GMO foods if they want to. But it would allow those people who do not want to eat them, like everyone in Europe, for instance, a chance to choose. Right now, with no GMO labeling, one of the only ways to be sure that you are not ingesting GMO food is to choose organic food. So that is probably the reason of the timing in terms of the promotion of this particular article at this time. This is just my opinion. If you have a different opinion, I'd love to hear it, and you actually can call in today at 888-874-4888. But the story gets even more interesting about this Right to Know Act, because I was interested in knowing why they would actually pass this. And what we found out is that one of the things that was involved in that article is that one of the authors of the article was involved years ago, and his name is Olkin. You can read it if you go to my website and then go to the link of the article, go to naturalnurse.com, go to blog and look at the article. You will see that one of the people that is involved in writing this exact article, this Stanford study, is Dr. Ingram Olkin. That's O-L-K-I-N. And Dr. Olkin was actually deeply involved with the tobacco lobby. And he created a way of manipulating numbers that helped to promote the pseudoscience that downplayed the negative health effects of smoking. Don't you find that fascinating? I do. So actually, this same author was involved in writing this article, which twisted the fact and brought out just the one part of the study that talked about the fact that organic food was not found to have a much higher nutritional value and downplayed the positive aspects of lower pesticide residue and lower bacteria count. So this exact guy, Dr. Olkin, was known with ties to big business players in the GMO proliferation industry. And of course, they are working hard to stop the passage of Proposition 37. And how are they doing that? By dumping tons of advertising dollars into California and trying to convince the voters in California that if this law passes, Proposition 37, it will actually cost them a lot more money, which is silly, because if you ever look at the little stickers on your produce, and I actually did a YouTube on this if you want to watch me explaining it, if you look at those little stickers on your produce, you will see that they have numbers on them, and they're already doing this, so it doesn't cost any more. doesn't cost any more at all. And they already have numbers on them. And if you look at the first number on the sticker, if it's a number 4, it means it's a conventionally grown produce. If it's a number 9, it means it's an organically grown produce. And if it's a number 8, it's a genetically modified produce. So there's already labeling on the individual pieces of fruits and vegetables just by looking at the stickers. But we're talking now about adding a GMO on the label of, let's say, packaged foods. If it contained any, let's say, citric acid, which is a corn derivative, and corn derivatives are pretty much 100% from genetically modified food. So looking more deeply at the positive properties of organic farming, there are studies that do show that organic food is more nutritious. One example of this is a study called Organic Food Has a Higher Nutrient Content, which is in an interview with Charles Benbrook. Charles is the chief scientist for the Organic Center, and he points out that higher levels of vitamin C and antioxidants have been measured in organic food, and I do have a link to that study as well. In addition to increased health benefits from eating organic food, as well as the fact that taste tests demonstrate that they often come out ahead in freshness and flavor, there are many environmental benefits to organic food, such as less pollution, less toxic water runoff, less development of resistant strains of plant pests, better soil quality, increased biodiversity, increased crop yield, increased worker health, and many more. In terms of cost, organic can also save you money. One of the things I find amazing is when I'm seeing patients at my clinic, and we do both in-office and phone consults for individuals who want to know how to integrate things like homeopathy, herbal medicine, and natural foods into their life. And I often find that people will say, well, I can't eat healthy because it costs too much money. That is just absurd. If you look at what it costs for one McDonald's lunch and then what it costs for a soup, let's say, made out of cabbage, which you can make at home with cabbage and brown rice and a plethora of other vegetables. And if you're not a vegan or a vegetarian, you can put in an organic chicken and then cook that soup and then freeze it and take it with you to lunch. That costs you pennies, and you can feed your family for like $50 for a week if you're eating all excellent organic food, such as a high vegetable content diet. So I always find that that's actually really funny, because eating organic can save you a lot of money, especially if you factor in the health benefits of avoiding the health issues that are linked to exposure to endocrine-disrupting toxic chemicals, such as pesticides and herbicides, which this Stanford study just pointed out are so much lower in organic foods. So that would be a good reason right there, even if there was no other reason. In addition, another way that you can save is to seek out farmers markets and small local growers who cannot afford the organic certification, which, by the way, is getting to be extremely expensive to have your farm or garden certified as organic. But you can just go to these farmers markets and ask your local farmer, do they grow? Well, could they lie to you? Yes. But you know what I find when I'm looking at those farmers right in the eye? They're telling you the truth, probably even more so than buying food that has an organic label on it from a mass market supermarket. Who knows what goes on, especially when things are organically grown in, let's say, China or Burma, versus a local farmer, and you're getting the fresh nutrients from locally picked produce. And often their prices are way below the grocery store. So all of this would really help you. So labeling GMOs would increase your knowledge so that you can be a more educated healthcare consumer. And right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, we are happy to help you increase your knowledge of what you want to do to keep yourself and your family healthy. And everyone here on the Gary Knowles Network offers you information. And again, those things are archived basically 24/7. So you can visit prn.fm, go to the archives, listen to any of the shows, and download them, and then take them with you and listen to them at your convenience. Because just by listening to today's show, you would find out what a ruse it was in terms of them promoting that study from Stanford as something that was against organic food, and then look at something like the timing of it, which is incredibly interesting, seeing as we are about to vote in California on Proposition 37. So join your groups, be a mouse warrior even if you don't have time to go to rallies and write letters like I always do, but even be a mouse warrior and lend your support so that your fellow Americans will have more knowledge and will be an educated healthcare consumer. So I wanted to thank you so much for joining us right here today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. You can read the article we refer to today under blog, or you can go to the schedule to find out all the classes that we announced earlier in the show, or anytime so that you can keep up with the classes, or visit us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you continue to stay healthy.